Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
Welcome to the grill room, the most comprehensive look inside the world of global golf. I'm Bob Bubka, alongside Alex Maselli. And Alex, I know you and I are both excited about the fact that next week, our Grill Room Golf Show is going to be picked up by Talk Sport, the world's largest sports radio station broadcasting out of London. Boy, it sounds exciting to me. I know it sounds exciting to you, and I'm sure our listeners across the pond are going to be happy to be able to hear you and I disagree on a regular basis.
Well, that's if you step up once in a while and disagree. I mean, lately you've been like Bernie Sanders, agreeing with me on everything.
Well, that's because I'm trying to be more like Donald Trump, but I just don't have it in me.
Well, you know, that's part of the problem. We don't start fights on the show where people come in and start trying to disrupt us. Maybe our executive producer, Janice Self, could walk in and make some changes to that scenario. But, yeah, I mean, obviously it's exciting to get across the pond. I mean, my accent is fine. Your accent is going to be a bit of a problem. We might have to actually hand out some kind of translation document after every show so people can understand what you're saying.
Well, slow down there, big boy. I've been on Talk Sport for the past 13 years. They have no problem understanding what I talk about as long as I keep it a golf. Sometimes I stray from golf, and they do have a lot of trouble. But come on, we got to move on.
Which is the shocking part, that they'd actually 13 years been on Talk Sport and they'd still let you have a show. That's the shocking part.
That is pretty amazing. I'll guarantee you that. Hey, let's move on. We got a lot to cover this week. And let's begin with, it seems like maybe the younger group of players that have been dominating the scene for, you know, recently, I would say, has made some of the more established players, specifically Adam Scott, doing what he's done. And now we have Charles Schwartzel coming through with a victory. And one thing I was thinking about Charles Schwartzel, and maybe you know the answer off the top of your head, you know more about inside golf than anybody I know. How many players do you think their first victory on the PGA Tour was a major championship, a la, you know, Charles Schwartzel winning the Masters as his first PGA Tour win?
Well, there were a couple, and actually somewhere their only win was a major win. It's kind of hard to believe that Charles Schwartzel's last win on the PGA Tour was the Masters, but it was. And, you know, even this win that he had at Valspar in Tampa, I'm not going to say is suspect, but certainly, you know, had a great final round. And what I think is interesting is how if you have a great final round, a lot of times you win golf tournaments. You would think that, okay, that's going to, a great final round is going to get you somewhere. But usually you can't be that close, because if you had, you know, if you'd been playing well, you would have been right there. Charles Schwartzel, I think, was four shots back when the day started on a golf course that's pretty hard, which makes it even harder. I mean, I think it makes it even harder to come back. But yet other guys will argue that on a difficult golf course, that's what you want. You want to get that opportunity, because most of the guys will fall backwards, which is exactly what happened to most of them, including Bill Haas at the end.
You know, the one thing I take a hard, long look at, though, Alex, is Charles Schwartzel had the lowest round of the day on Sunday. And very rarely does the lowest round of the day on Sunday, you know, win a golf tournament, because you got so many guys that are nowhere near the top. They go out, they fire at you know, whole locations with reckless abandon and simply put up good scores. The pressure's not on them. When Charles Schwartzel posts the lowest score of the day and that equates to a victory, I think that puts it in a very special category.
Okay. Well, I disagree with you. I don't know if it puts it in a special category. I mean, at the end of the day, with all of these things, Somebody wins and everybody else loses. That's what happens at a golf tournament. And Charles Schwartzel putting together a great performance on Sunday and then winning in the playoff. I mean, he played great on Sunday. But what's odd about that is if you look at some of the other guys who played very well for 4 days, they don't win golf tournaments. Charles Schwartzel had one very, very good day and wins the golf tournament. And that's what's, I think, the oddest part of professional golf.
One thing before we listen to Charles Schwartzel, it's pretty well accepted out there. I'm certainly in his camp. One of the best swings that you'll ever see. A perfect gentleman on and off the golf course. Somebody that, you know, coming out of South Africa, getting opportunities due to the efforts of Ernie Els early on in his career. Just an all-round good guy and certainly a good victory for Charles Schwartzel. And let's listen to what he had to say about this win being such a mental part of the game.
Yeah, it really is a great feeling. You know, winning back in 2011, you know, the biggest tournament in our sport. You know, your expectations go up, and you know, I figured that I'll win a few times, the way I played there, and you know, it just never came, and then I went through a bad stretch where my swing was a bit off, and I lost a lot of confidence. You know, you start thinking, am I actually going to win that? Yeah, again, you know, you feel good enough because I had a few wins outside of America on the European Tour. Needed to get over the mental hurdle of winning at Yar again. And I think the way today played out, with it being really difficult, in a way made it a little easier, because you're grinding just to make pars and keep the ball in play, and it was really difficult. So it takes your mind off the win a little bit more than where you would normally play in really good conditions. So I thought I played really well on the weekend. Same thing at Doral. So I knew the game was still in good shape. I just needed to put it together on the weekend when it counted. So it was nice to play well today.
Tidy win for Schwartzel, shooting a 4-under par 67. Bitter defeat for Bill Haas, Alex.
Well, I think bitter because it's certainly, as we have talked about earlier, it was his golf tournament to let it slide away. And then you let Charles Schwartzel win the tournament on a par on a playoff hole, Bob. That's just disappointing. You got to at least make the guy do something. Like a birdie would be nice.
No, really. The only defense about that, the 18th hole at Copperhead, certainly no automatic par when you stand on that tee. But ideally, you would like to see the guy have to make birdie to win. What about the play of Steve Stricker? I thought it was rather impressive.
Well, I think it was impressive because he's been struggling, hasn't played a lot, hasn't practiced as much as he sure he probably wants to. But what's the most impressive part is he seemed to find a putting stroke, which he'd kind of lost. And so then I thought, okay, so he plays at Tampa, plays well. Now he's got an opportunity to keep it going, play at Bay Hill next week. But he's not in the field. So I don't understand what he's doing. I mean, you got to capitalize. When you're playing well, you got to give yourself some opportunities to kind of run the string a little. And he's not giving himself that opportunity. So even though I thought his play was great at Tampa, perfect golf course for him, disappointed that he's not in Bay Hill.
Well, the amazing thing is I used the word impressive. You used the word impressive. And I think we should have saved it for the play of Lee McCoy. Everybody expected a dynamic performance out of a 22-year-old down at the Copperhead course. He was our defending champion. He was Jordan Spieth. But it wasn't that 22-year-old. It was the play of Lee McCoy playing in his first sponsor's invitation on the PGA Tour. Only a senior, Alex, at the University of Georgia, a local boy. He goes out there and finishes fourth. How do we explain that?
Well, I think you need to know a little more about Lee McCoy, which a lot, obviously, you novices that don't follow the college game didn't know anything about. But I can tell you that last year, not only was Lee McCoy on the Walker Cup team, but last year, the week before the Masters, the Saturday and Sunday, there's always a college tournament in Augusta. And Georgia is always there because basically the players get to go ahead and go to Augusta National on the Monday. That's part of the deal. Augusta State gets the tickets for him and everything else. Lee McCoy played in that event, won that event, medalist in that event, and he had found out that week that his grandfather had died. The kid's got a lot of game, just a tremendous amount of game. A lot of, you know, he's got a great mental attitude, not a big guy, but hits the ball a ton. Just a very, very solid player. And so, first of all, it seems to be unfair that this is the first time he's played in a tour event because he's got such talent. But secondly, it's not a surprise to people that follow college golf that Lee McCoy played well last week at Tampa.
Well, I would say finishing fourth in your first PGA Tour event is a lot better than just playing well. I remember way back 1998, I was standing right behind the green at Royal Birkdale when a 17-year-old Justin Rose, he tied for fourth at that Open Championship. And the funny part about that, the very next day, he declared himself a professional. A lot of people argued that he wasn't ready to be a pro, and he rushed it. Well, his first 23 events on the European Tour, he failed to make the cut. And the drums were beating so loud that, hey, Justin Rose, it was a fluke at Royal Birkdale. Well, now that he's a former United States Open champion, I don't think anybody thinks that the game of Justin Rose is anywhere being labeled a fluke.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob, I think everybody was caught off guard that he decided to turn professional because they thought that he wasn't ready. And I think that's, I mean, if you can't make the cut in 23 events in a row, I think that's a fair assessment, but maybe you weren't ready. You know, he had certain situations going on at home and everything that was happening, and that he thought that was the best move. And that's a big thing that happens in the UK. I mean, they don't have the college golf system that we have. A lot of those kids will come over here. And in 1998, there weren't as many coming over here as there are now. So Justin Rose was really pretty much between a rock and a hard place. And it was that was one of the better British Opens that I can remember. You know, Brian Watts and Mark O'Meara in a playoff was a huge, huge day. Great day for Mark O'Meara, but it equally as great a day for Justin Rose, who, as you said, is proven that making that transition from better athlete to professional athlete would make sense, even though 23 missed cuts in a row made you didn't think that was going to be the case.
1998 can certainly be the link for Mark O'Meara to be in the World Golf Hall of Fame. Earlier that year, he won the Masters and then went on to win the Open Championship at Royal Birkdale. All right, now the elephant in the room. We have to bring it up. What's up with Jordan Spieth?
Wow, I don't think anything's up, actually. I think it's more like golf is what it is. You know, look, I think the worst thing that could have happened to him in 2016 was the 8-shot win in Maui. I think that made him think that golf maybe wasn't as hard as he thought it was. And he's actually talked a little bit about this. Now all of a sudden you wake up and you realize that golf is as hard as you think it is, and maybe even harder in this particular case. Jordan Spieth struggling. But that being said, shoots 76 in the opening round of Valspar, and actually going into the final round at 2-under had a chance to win the golf tournament. If he just would have stepped up and had a day like a Charles Schwartzel kind of day, you know, Jordan Spieth is right in the middle of the mix at the end of that golf tournament. So that's the weird thing. That's the dynamic, the hard dynamic if you're a professional athlete on this tour. You don't have to play great every day, but when you do play great, it can make the difference, like Charles Schwartzel. It's just one of the things where Jordan Spieth, A, didn't get it done, admitted that, but B, it wasn't that he had done. He said our team didn't get it done, and he looked right at Michael Gruller when saying that, because there were some mistakes made on both sides of that equation. And as Jordan said, when we win together, and we lose together. So there's a lot of this conversation going on between the Gruller camp and the Spieth camp on what they're going to do going into match play, going into the Houston Open, and then finally going into the defense of the Masters. So we'll see what happens when we get to that point. But the one thing I will say, Bob, is he's not the only guy to show and have what I would say is a questionable beginning of the season. This happened to Tiger before in the past as well, and then all of a sudden you see him win four or five in a row. Is Jordan Spieth able to do that? Well, he proved he could last year. So I think we need to give him a little time yet before we sit there and question what's going on with Jordan Spieth in 2016.
Speaking of questions, Alex, your take on what Jordan Spieth did say. Very rarely will you see a player put some of the blame on his caddy. It's well and good to give your caddy credit when you win. But, you know, when I hear the words that some bad decisions were made, I mean, it's Jordan Spieth making that decision. He can get advice from Grella, but certainly Grella's not telling him, hey, this is what I want you to do. I don't care what you want to do, Jordan. You're going to do this. To me, it's always the players' responsibility for pulling the trigger on a particular club, on a particular shot. No matter what it is, it's the players' bailiwick that has to be dominant, and I don't think it's a real team thing. I think advice is given, but I don't know if advice has to be taken.
Well, I think, Bob, you have to realize that when you rely on your caddy, and when you go to him and he gives you a number and he gives you a suggestion on a club, 99 times Jordan Spieth is going to go with that. And so when it's not right or it doesn't work, you know, there are some conversations that have to be had between the caddy and the player. And look, that the way that system works between those two guys is different than most systems out here. I mean, you look at Adam Scott and Clarkey now. I mean, that seems to be a pretty good mix. You look at Bones and Phil Mickelson, that's a pretty good mix. You look at Bubba Watson and Teddy Scott, that's a pretty good mix. So the Greller-Spieth mix is a pretty good mix as well. And so you're going to look at your caddies sometimes when things don't go right if, in fact, you relied on him and maybe what he gave you wasn't exactly what it should have been. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You need to have that second person out there helping you.
Let me ask you this, Alex. Do you envision a scenario where Jason Day is going to throw his caddy underneath the bus?
Well, do I envision that? Not necessarily, because I think that relationship is way beyond just caddy-player relationship. And I think that's why that's not going to happen. But those are very rare out here. Everyone else, look, nobody's job is 100% secure on the PGA Tour if you're a caddy. And every one of those caddies know that. And there will be times when you'll find out that a caddy and a player split. Sometimes it's a caddy making that decision. Sometimes it's a player making that decision. But all of them know that no way, no how is the job 100% secure.
I think most of our listeners might have been a little bit surprised just hearing you say that, that you know a caddy sometimes initiates the breakup. But I would put those odds at about probably 1 in 10. For every 10 times a caddy's fired by a player, maybe one time a caddy will fire a player. Am I pretty close to the money?
Well, I don't know. I mean, let's see. John fired Luke Donald recently. I know that Scotty Sajak back in the day, when he finished second with Paul Goidos at AT&T, had fired him to go to Stuart Appleby. I think it's fair to say that Woody probably fired Hunter Mahan to go to Matt Kuchar. And that's, you know, those are just things that have happened recently. So, you know, I mean, I guess you could say most likely it's going to be the player firing the caddy, but I don't know if it's 1 out of 10.
All right, let's take a quick timeout right now. And when we come back, we'll hear what happened in Thailand. Another surprise winner, as far as I'm concerned. That's coming your way right after this brief break.
Nothing surprises me, Bob, with your limited knowledge of the Thai Open. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfWeek.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grill Room Golf Show.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. The 2015 Masters champion, the U.S. Open champion, and the FedEx Cup champion, Jordan Spieth, agrees.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Sight is one of our most valued senses. Many cherished memories and important life lessons are acquired through sight. Through the Transitions Healthy Sight for Life Fund, we're reaching out in communities around the world to help people understand and protect their healthy sight. Think about what you'd miss seeing if you lost your eyesight tomorrow, and take steps to protect your vision today. See more at HealthySightForLife.org.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, it was Scott Henn who won the True Thailand Classic, presented by Chang, for his second European Tour title. And let's give a listen to Mr. Henn, because he's very proud of this performance.
Obviously, I learned a lot from last year where I pushed too hard on 17 and made a bogey. So this year, there was not going to be any pushing. I was just going to try and do the best I can. And like I said, let the golf course come to me. Don't try and go to the golf course. And worked out well for me, obviously. And it's great. It's great. It's something I'm trying to teach my son when he plays baseball. Let the ball come to you. Don't go to the ball. Anytime you're leading on a Saturday night, it's fantastic. And when you're leading on a Sunday, it's awesome. And to win any trophy, I'm immensely proud. And, you know, it's something, like I said, at the end of my career, that nobody else is going to worry about it. But when my children have a look how many wins I've had wherever, and they can be proud of their father and what he's done, then that's all there is to it.
I remember seeing Scott Henn at the United States Open at Congressional. And, boy, did he have a sharp pair of slacks on. And I said, Scott, man, I love those slacks. Where can I get a pair? He said, well, I'll give you the name of my tailor. He's in Singapore, and they're very, very reasonable, and they'll be made to fit. And I said, what do you call reasonable? He said, well, you can get a pair like this, probably somewhere around $500. Somehow I lost the name of that tailor. I didn't keep it too long.
Well, Bobby, I think what's most interesting about Henn is the fact that he was playing in the World Golf Championships, Cadillac Championship in Miami at Doral, had to jump on a plane, fly all the way to Thailand, and then turns around with this kind of performance. That's pretty impressive. You know, I know where other guys were coming the other way, most specifically Louis Oosthuizen coming from Perth to play at Doral, struggled for days before he really got his feet under him. So tremendous performance by Scott Henn, who is he's certainly a road warrior, travels everywhere to play professional golf. By the way, the Grill Room is proud to be entertaining the active men and women in our military, as well as our veterans, as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
All right, Alex, coming up, the World Golf Championships Dell Match Play. That's on the horizon, and looks right now like Ian Poulter might not be in the field. I'm sure Mr. Poulter not happy about his play that will eliminate him from the top 64 players being in that field. Jim Furyk certainly not going to be playing. Henrik Stenson not playing. What about Patton Kizzier?
Well, I mean, Kizzier has played very well on the web.com, got out here this year because of it. Was the what's interesting is everybody talked about Patton Kizzier coming out. All of a sudden, he's going to be in match play. And as you said, Ian Poulter may not. Ian Poulter has had what I would consider a very poor year for him. It's unclear why he is struggling. He struggled at the end of last year, continues to struggle this year. I think he's more seems to be distracted. He was distracted by a heckler last week in Tampa. Then he went to Twitter about the heckler and went to the heckler's place of business, which happened to be a university, complaining about this guy. I mean, come on, Ian, are you serious? The stuff that you do and the stuff that you say, and you're sitting there complaining about a heckler, and then you try to go get the guy basically fired? I think it was it's not only uncalled for, it seems to show you that his distractions are leading to his sinking right into his game or seeping right into his game. And Ian Poulter better get his act together, because it's no one has ever said he's been one of the greatest players to be out here. You know, I think it's been a bit of a miraculous turn for Ian Poulter to have such success on the PGA Tour and the European Tour. But if he doesn't get his act together, he's not even going to be on the Ryder Cup team, which I know, forget match play. If he's not on that Ryder Cup team, Ian Poulter is really going to be very, very unhappy.
Well, I think Darren Clarke, push comes to shove, Ian Poulter certainly will be a captain's pick. That's my opinion.
Well, just as long as you brought that up, why do you believe that? Because Ian was a captain's pick last time when his game wasn't necessarily 100%, and he didn't play very well at Glen Eagles.
He didn't play very well, but there's something about Ryder Cup. There's something about Ian Poulter. I'm entitled to my opinion. Nothing you're going to say is going to change that. Darren Clark will pick Ian Poulter as a captain's pick. End of story. Move on to Jordan Spieth. You know, he's played a lot at the Austin Country Club when he played for UT. I want you to do me a favor when we do get to match play. Maybe you've had the pleasure before, maybe you haven't, but you got to make it a point to go in the pro shop. The head pro at the Austin Country Club is a fellow by the name of Dale Morgan, by far the best dressed club professional in America. He makes your wardrobe look like he bought it at Goodwill. Just stop in, say hello to Dale Morgan. But will Jordan Spieth have an edge at the Austin Country Club by playing there so much?
Oh, I think absolutely. I mean, if he's on his game, anywhere near his game, I think he will. He'll know what you should do and shouldn't do, which is imperative, I think, in match play, knowing what you can do, where you can go after things, where you can miss and not miss. I think he's got he would certainly have an advantage. Is it going to be enough of an advantage for him to win or play well enough to get deep into match play? We'll find out, but I think he's got to have an advantage.
Two friends played the golf course the other day. They say it's in absolutely magnificent condition. Fairways are great. Greens are even better. All right, we got the Shell Houston Open, obviously, coming up after the match play. And then, can you believe it, Alex? On to the Masters. Are we here already? Wow, first major of 2016 immediately on the horizon.
Well, you know, when we left Wisconsin after the PGA Championship, everybody was focused on the Masters. And it was clear Jordan Spieth was going to be the favorite going in. The most recent numbers I've seen, Bobby, is that Jordan Spieth now is tied with Rory McIlroy as favorites at 7-1, which is a considerable change to what it was at the beginning of the year, just showing how Jordan's game at least seems to be questioned by even the bookies in Las Vegas. I wouldn't question his game. Rory McIlroy has not shown me he can win at Augusta National yet.
I'll keep the name Justin Rose on that betting slip. If you're a good listener of the Grow Room, you may make some valuable dollars. He'll be off at good value. Anyway, Ted Bishop, the former president of the PGA of America, has written a book, Something About Political Correctness. We'll see what that's all about right after the break.
You're listening to the Grow Room, powered by GolfWeek.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and on Facebook at The Grow Room Golf Show.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Ricky Fowler agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hi, I'm Ernie Els. Autism is not game over, it is game on. Get educated and learn the facts. Please learn the early warning signs on our website, elsforautism.com, and talk to your doctor about an autism screening if you have any concerns.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, we mentioned it before the break. Ted Bishop has written a book, The Power Brokers, Political Correctness and Hypocrisy in Golf. PGA of America's legal team evidently wants to see it. Ted says he has no intention of showing it to them in advance. your thoughts. You're good friends with Ted Bishop. You're good friends with the PGA of America. Hate to put you in the middle, but what are we looking at here, Alex?
Well, I think in some cases you're looking at a pretty good read. Ted Bishop, I'm sure, feels like he was slighted at the end of his tenure at the PGA of America. And, you know, it's a tough deal because he spent a large part of his professional life involved with the organization. So to write about the organization and write about what happened to him and write about what went on during not only his tenure as president, but even before that, there's some interesting and compelling things in there, I'm sure. And I can understand why the PGA of America's legal team would like to see it before it went out.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that, and we'll see what transpires. Somebody keeping an eye on something else? My buddy Tiger Woods down in Thompson Station, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. According to the Beacon Land Development CEO, Mike Abbott, Tiger feels that golf will return to being played on the ground, and run-up shots instead of target golf will prevail. And he seems really excited about the prospects of the rolling terrain and building that type of golf course right there, even though as he's doing that type of work, there's still no timeline to when Tiger's going to return to the PGA Tour and full-time competitive play. More and more, Alex, looking like we may not see Tiger in 2016. Have you heard anything to the contrary?
No, I haven't heard anything to the contrary, and I have said this before. I doubt that we're going to see him in the 2016 season, though I do think that we may see him in 2016, but it'll be the 17 season when we see him. And then the question is going to be, what does he really have? And I think that's really more the question. It's not that he's not going to come back. It's going to be, what does he come back with? And I have to be honest with you, Bob, I find it's a little interesting that he believes that golf is going to return to be playing on the ground with run-up shots instead of target golf. Well, I don't know where he thinks that. I mean, all the equipment is built now to be in play in the air. It's not built to be play on the ground.
Well, I know I'm excited about it, and I hope Tiger's on the money. I haven't been able to get the ball airborne lately, so if you're supposed to play it on the ground, I'm going to have a huge edge. Well, Alex, you know, the Grow Room believes that growing the game has to start with the kids in junior golf. And in order for the kids to learn the game, have fun doing it, and to be successful, they have to have the right equipment. Yes, even the little ones. And now there's no reason for any child to play with cut-down clubs ever again. Golfin, that's G-O-L-P-H-I-N, has the answer. And by the way, Golfin has just announced that their award-winning Scottish-based company has partnered with the Middle Atlantic Section PGA. Golfin equipment will be used for junior golf instruction within that section. Beginners to winners, not only learning the sport of golf, but also in life. Just visit golfin.com to see how they can help your junior golfer learn to love the sport of a lifetime.
Now, Bobby, do you think our listeners know that the volunteers are the backbone of the PGA Tour? Well, Astellas Pharma and the PGA Tour has teamed up to present the Volunteer Challenge. And at the Valspar Championship, Bob had a chance to catch up with some of the volunteers and with Gary Kaiser from Astellas Pharma, who talked about their exciting Volunteer Challenge program.
The Grow Room always makes reference to the fact that the volunteers are the backbone of the PGA Tour, and now Astellas Pharma, in conjunction with the PGA Tour, has started a program that's fun for the volunteers and designed to generate a little more recognition for all their efforts and dedication to the tournament charities. They donate hours and hours of time and expertise to the running of any tournament. Gary Kaiser, who is the director of marketing for Astellas Pharma in the United States, and his team head up this program. So who better to ask? Gary, first, what exactly is the Volunteer Challenge?
Thanks, Bob. It's a great question. The PGA Tour Volunteer Challenge, sponsored by Maribetrick Maribegron, is a 16-tournament competition Valspar here this week is our fifth edition or fifth installment of that program. The program itself is a wonderful vote for me, friendly competition that raises funds for local charities while recognizing the talent, passion, and commitment of the tour's more than 100,000 volunteers.
So how does the program work?
So over the course of about 6 to 7 weeks prior to the tournament, the volunteers go to pgatour.com/volunteers, set up a page for themselves, and reach out to their friends, their family, and the charities that they're going to designate the funds to go to. So what the program really entails is at the end of the competition, which ends Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern, the volunteer with the most votes gets to present a $10,000 check to the charity of their choice. So that's really the beauty of this program is the volunteer is going to direct the funds to that charity, and that charity really benefits from that activity.
Tell me again how someone can vote for their favorite volunteer.
To vote for the volunteer, go to pgatour.com/volunteer. Select the tournament of your choice, this one in particular, Valspar, and then select the volunteer and that you want to vote for, whether it's a family member or a friend, or they have a charity that you want to support, and go ahead and vote for them.
Well, thank you very much, Gary, and we certainly wish you luck with the Volunteers Challenge program. As it turns out, we were lucky enough to talk with Tony and Terry Eisenhower. Tony, I understand you were a winner of the Volunteer Challenge last year.
Yes, sir, Bob. We were lucky enough with our organization. We reached out to the members, had their friends, their family, sons, daughters, everyone involved to reach out and get votes. And we were fortunate enough to be the winners last year. We had the money donated to the Tarpon Springs Band Boosters. They are the organization that supports the Tarpon Springs Leadership Conservatory for the Arts.
Why do you volunteer, and what is your favorite tournament job in the volunteer world?
We actually volunteer to support the Copperhead Charities and the Valspar Championship and the various other charities that they support. I guess my favorite job is going to be parking, since I'm the co-chairman for the parking for the tournament.
Terry, what do you like about volunteering on the PGA Tour and specifically at the Valspar Championship?
I really enjoy working at the Valspar Championship because it's like a family here. We see friends, we've made friends with the championship in the years that we've volunteered here, and we see those same friends every year. I'm actually the co-chair for the ticket sales, and I enjoy doing both the ticketing and the parking.
If either of you win the Volunteer Challenge this week, which charity will you single out to receive the $10,000 donation?
The donation would go to the Tarpon Springs Band Boosters. And we choose that charity because our daughter is a former member of the Leadership Conservatory for the Arts, which is what the Tarpon Springs Band Boosters supports.
Thank you for volunteering. The PGA Tour couldn't function without the volunteers and their dedication, which also means that the massive amounts of money wouldn't be available to the many charities supported by the PGA Tour and the individual tournaments like the Valspar Championship. So, Gary, can you sum up just why Estellas Farmer is involved in the PGA Tour Volunteer Challenge?
Certainly. You know, Estellas is a proud partner with PGA Tour and the Volunteer Challenge, really for the main point that both organizations have a shared, deep commitment to the power of volunteerism and charitable giving.
We want to thank you very much, Gary, and good luck with a fun, much-needed Volunteer Challenge program. All right, Alex, time to take a look at the schedule. Let's begin with the LPGA, the JTBC Founders Cup. This week's going to be played at the JW Marriott Phoenix Desert Ridge Resort and Spa, and the tournament is designed to pay tribute to the founding members of the LPGA.
Well, you know, Bob, I think the most important thing is that the LPGA understands where it came from, its roots. Michael Wan coming in and suggesting that they do this. You know, it's a celebration of the LPGA. And if you look back, you know, from Babe Harris Dietrichson on out, and you read about what these women did and how they kind of barnstormed around to get interest in their game, I think it was tremendous. And, you know, I think it's something the tour should look at. There's a lot of players that were involved in developing the PGA Tour, pulling the PGA Tour basically away from the PGA of America and then making it the tour that we have today. And Gardner Dickinson, who people may not know, was really the architect of that. He got Palmer involved eventually. Nicklaus was involved. But Dickinson was the guy that took a lot of the flack, but he was the guy that pushed this thing along. And I think that it would be something that the PGA Tour should be looking at as well.
Took a golf lesson from Gardner Dickinson down at Frenchman's Creek in Florida. When he finished, he said, "I might be the worst pupil that he has ever had." Somebody that certainly doesn't fall into that category, his name's Arnold Palmer. Probably going to be a little less visible during this week's Arnold Palmer Invitational. But in essence, Alex, it's all about Arnie this week. And how's he doing?
Well, I mean, look, Arnold Palmer's 86 years old, Bob. I think he's doing as well as can be expected for someone that's 86. Arnold Palmer's had a great life, has had great experiences, has done a lot for golf, there's no question. And, you know, when we had Byron Nelson at the Byron Nelson Classic, or we had Sam Snead when he was at Greensboro, I mean, at some point, we're going to lose these icons. And unfortunately, Arnold doesn't look like he's doing great, but he's here this week. He's not going to be doing interviews. And the biggest reason for that is not because he can't answer the questions. He's just got such a very hard time hearing now that it's just almost impossible for him to hear the question. And it just becomes a very difficult process of trying to get him the question and for him to answer it. So, you know, look, anytime you get to see the king giving the trophy, walking the range, talking to players, you know, it's a tremendous, tremendous feeling. And it's a feeling that no matter how old Arnold Palmer is and how much he's limited in what he can or can't do, it's still the best things in golf.
I second that motion. They got a pretty good field too, Alex. 12 of the top 30 in the world ranking. Adam Scott looking for his third consecutive victory. Nobody's ever won three events on the Florida swing. Can Adam Scott get the job done?
Well, he's certainly playing pretty well. What I find interesting, though, is that if he did do well here, if win or do well, his plan is to still go to Augusta National with Stevie Williams on the bag. I'm not really sure I understand that whole process, but I think Adam can play well here. You know, when you go through the field, though, Bob, and you talked about 12 of the top 30 in the world, name how many of them are in that group of 12 of the top 30 are Americans. That seems to be the thing that's a bit questionable. You know, no Ricky Fowler, no Jordan Spieth, obviously Furyk's not here, no Dustin Johnson, no Patrick Reed. It's a bit odd that none of the Americans seem to be here this week.
Well, a big salute to Fowler. Due to a scheduling conflict, he wasn't able to play this week at the Arnold Palmer, but did make it a point last week, go down and spend some time with the king. Arnie and Ricky had a very nice lunch, and Ricky says that he's going to be back there a little more frequently during the remainder of the season. He realizes the full value of getting an opportunity to spend any time with Arnold Palmer. What about Rory McIlroy, Alex? This new left-hand low putting method. You know, everybody said, wow, he took 23 putts down at Doral after putting this cross-handed style into play and then failed to do anything the rest of the week. To me, I'm not happy with it. I mean, Rory McIlroy won majors. He dominated golf, putting conventional. I think it was premature in going left-hand low. I know how you feel.
Well, I think doing left-hand low is like changing a putter. I mean, when Adam Scott decided to go to the broomstick putter from putting conventionally, you know, he did it because he felt like it was the better thing for him to do. In Rory McIlroy's case, maybe in the short term it is the better thing. Maybe then when he goes back to putting more conventionally, maybe he just putts better. I mean, I think that when you're struggling, you don't feel like you have what you need, you need to make some changes. And so I applaud Rory McIlroy for making the change. It's not something dramatic. It's not like he's Nick Faldo saying, "I'm rebuilding my swing." So let's give the kid a chance. Let's see what happens. And if it works, great. And if not, he's always got the ability to go back to what he used to do.
Wouldn't surprise me if we see the name Henrik Stenson or Justin Rose on top of the leaderboard come Sunday.
Well, I think Stenson just shows you that he's so long. He's got such great game, but a little bit in a he's got a little bit of a problem here and there on his swing right now, and I think that's why it's held him back this year. Justin Rose also has had chances at this time or a lot this year, but he's also struggled at times as well. So, you know, both guys are still trying to find it. But look, let's be honest. We're in the Florida swing. We're trying to find it. We'd like to win, but if we don't win, we're just getting ourselves ready for one thing and one thing only, and that's Augusta National.
Well, somebody likes to win at Bay Hill. His name Every. He not only won last year, he won the year before. Going for a three-peat this year. Is that even possible?
Well, you know, I think if you would have said, is it possible for Matt Every to even have a successful defense of his title last year, you would have been laughed out of the room. Now we're talking three-peat, which I think is even harder. But, you know, horses for courses kind of thing. Matt Every has struggled all of last year except for 1 week. Pretty much struggled this year, but you never know. He only needs 1 week, right?
That's all you need on the PGA Tour. Could be a big week for the amateur. You know him very well, Bryson DeChambeau. A lot of people expect a lot of big things. I think Alex Vasselli's in that camp.
Well, I think he just showed the kind of game he had this year, playing in the desert, playing in the U.S. He's got a tremendous talent. Won the U.S. Amateur, won the NCAAs. Not too many guys have done that. You know, just guys like Tiger and Phil and Jack Nicklaus. So, you know, you start looking when you're in that category, it's not too bad. So I think Bryson's certainly got a bright future, as well as Maverick McNealy, who's going to be playing too. He's the number two amateur in the world amateur rankings, Bob, at Stanford. He's at Stanford. What's interesting about Maverick is it's still not 100% clear if he's going to ever turn professional. He doesn't really need to do so. He's financially independent because of his family. But McNealy is a guy that it would not surprise me if he decided to stay as an amateur and get involved in business down the road.
Well, if we find out that he's been on the phone with Jay Siegel, one of the most illustrious amateurs of all time, we may get a good indication. And if you think it's easy going to Stanford, Maverick McNealy getting ready to tee it up Thursday, first round. Meanwhile, tonight he has a four-hour-plus exam that he has to take in finances. And from what I hear, that exam is not an easy one. But Maverick McNealy, a super intelligent young man. Well, you don't get to Stanford by not being that way. One last thing before we put a bow on it, Alex. Is Bay Hill really a young guy's course?
Well, I think length is always a benefit, Bob. So if that's what you mean by, say, young guy's course. But look, this golf course, like this year as an example, when they just changed the grasses again, it's going to be one where you're going to have to know your way around, feel your way around. And I think in this year, I think if you're a little more mature player, you probably have a bit of an advantage. But generally, when you can go up and just slam the ball around, which is usually what Bay Hill is to a large extent, I think it is an advantage if you're a younger guy. But this year, I think you're going to find someone that's been out here a while is going to have the advantage. And, you know, you take a look at Tiger Woods and how often he won here 8 times. You take a look at Matt Every, where he's won a couple times. You take a look at Lauren Roberts, where he's done the same thing, won a couple times. It's one of those courses where knowledge, I think, begs performance. And I think in that particular case, I think knowledge is going to be a benefit here this week.
Well, we'll be certainly keeping an eye on that. And after that final putt drops, down to Austin we go for the Dell Match Play Championship.
Well, that's it for this week. You've been listening to The Grow Room, the most comprehensive look into the world of global golf, heard on TuneIn and the Armed Forces Radio Network, powered by GolfWeek.com. By the way, The Grow Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audioboom, and of course, on our website, thegrowroom.com. We'd love to have your feedback. You can send us an email at menu@thegrowroom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, to Golfin, Innovative Clubs for Kids, and to GolfWeek.com. So for Janice Self, our executive producer, Alex Bowtie Maselli, and myself, Bob Bupka, thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGR Golf and like us on Facebook at the Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.